The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
To Total Career Success with Ken and Cheryl Dawson. The mission of this radio show is to enable every listener to achieve their career aspirations and advance their careers, to achieve their potential and meet their financial goals. Now, here are your hosts, Ken and Cheryl Dawson.
Hello, Cheryl Dawson here with Ken, and we've got an excellent guest with us, Dr. Jackson Tobey, author of The Lowering of Higher Education in America. And we're going to be talking about raising the bar today. Before we get into the show, however, we'd like to announce that we've created 7 free videos for you, our listeners, that will help you get a better job for better pay and a better life. To access these free videos, simply go to www.betterjobbetterlife.com. Well, education beyond high school is essential for America's future and for every student who seeks to work in the information-driven career fields that command the highest salaries. Clearly, college is not for everyone. However, aspiring students, expectant parents, eager educators, demanding employers, and well-meaning government push for universal college education. Our guest today questions the wisdom of the system that has degraded the level of education in this country and suggests one solution to raise the bar. This will be an eye-opening interview, so stay tuned to be educated on higher education in America today. Let me just give a brief introduction to Dr. Tobey. Dr. Jackson Tobey taught sociology and criminology at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey for 50 years. Now retired, he is professor emeritus at Rutgers University and adjunct scholar for the American Enterprise Institute. He received his Ph.D. degree from Harvard University. His new book, The Lowering of Higher Education in America, challenges conventional wisdom as he has with opinion articles published in major newspapers for over 25 years. Welcome, Jackson.
Thank you.
We're really delighted to have you here. Tell us why you chose to teach for so many years.
Well, let me answer your question, if I may, in a roundabout way. May I do that?
Absolutely.
When I was a student, graduate student at Harvard many years ago, my professor defined socialization as learning to like doing what you have to do anyway. Now, what he meant by that were relatively commonplace things, like, for instance, if a man needs to go to the bathroom, he looks around and he finds a room and it's marked women. And he's not at all interested in that room. He looks for one marked men. He wants to go to a restroom marked men. Well, using that insight, socialization is learning to like doing what you want to do anyway. Let's take job choice. You have to work in order to live, and I had to choose a job, and I chose a job which I have learned to like very, very much. I enjoyed learning about how societies work, and I wanted to teach this to students, and so that's why I became a teacher, and I kept it up for 50 years.
Is that
an answer to your question?
That's an amazing track record.
Jackson, the issue that I would like to address with you is you've obviously, you have such an extraordinary track record in not only education, but sociology and so many other areas. And the very thing that I'm most impressed with is your commitment to changing the system and making it all it can be. We're in Houston, Texas, and we have a huge, huge issue with education, as most large cities do. And one of the things that has been extraordinarily positive, which I mentioned to you earlier, is the fact that we just got a new superintendent, and he's committed to improving standards and getting everybody up to step. But he's getting huge resistance from unions and a lot of teachers, quite honestly, who are not excellent or outstanding. Your thoughts on that as it relates to our audience and how you see our country and where it's going in that regard?
Well, let me again begin in a kind of roundabout way. One of the other people I admire, not my personal teacher, was Professor Reinhold Niebuhr, a remarkably brilliant theologian. And he's reputed to have said, "We mean well and do ill and justify our ill-doing by our well-meaning." Mm. Now, I think this is true generally in many areas, but in the area of education, it's particularly true. We have done things with the best of intentions, and they've had very bad unintended consequences. Now, what do I mean specifically? Specifically, I mean that we haven't given students a good enough incentives to try to study and learn a lot, either in the primary and secondary grades or in college. And what I have suggested in my book, the main purpose that I had in writing this book, is to try to tinker with the incentive system for education by influencing, by changing the student loan program. Now, student loan program is mainly directed at college students, but I think it will have feedback effects on high school also, so that I believe that if we make these changes that I have suggested in the last chapter of my book, that high schools will actually get better, and therefore they will send better students to college, and they will continue to work harder and do better in college.
It's interesting that you start the incentive, that you pinpoint a very broad policy, and rather than looking at to the parents or looking to the the school districts, as Ken was suggesting, our school superintendent is attempting to change the expectations within the schools. Why have you chosen this one particular incentive as a place to start?
I'm not saying it's the only thing to do, and I realize there are all kinds of things that can be done, but it seems to me that it provides a great deal of leverage. I believe in incentives. Even pigeons respond to incentives, as a famous Harvard psychologist demonstrated, B.F. Skinner. Now, I believe that if students thought and parents thought that if they want to get admitted to college and they wanted to get loans and grants, they have to perform better in high school, this would reduce the incentive to spend a lot of time at malls and to watch television and to buckle down and do their work. And it's not only incentives for the students, it's incentives for the parents, because the parents have to subsidize college these days, with college costing so much. So if you believe in incentives, as I do, you start using them. Not to say that you don't try other things, but it seems to me that you get more leverage out of that than almost anything else.
Jackson, you're absolutely right. In large part, the serious problem we have in education today is that there are no incentives. Teachers typically are not rewarded for excellence or being outstanding. Everybody's paid the same, and that is in large part of the problem. Let me share with you some parallels and analogies between what you're doing and what we're doing. Job Search, the Total System, our book, is all about people achieving better job, better pay, better life. But they do it by working harder, smarter, longer. And we say to clients, and it works like a charm, we've had tens of thousands of clients actually succeed in doing it. We say, if you individually, you know, whether you're mother, father, achieve better job, better pay, better life, why not teach that to your children? Instead of going home at night and having them play idiot games that do nothing for their mindset, why not, as a family, teach your kids to achieve better job, better pay, better life? What greater legacy can you possibly pass on to your children than that? And that incentive, both for the parents to become excellent and outstanding, we get better job, better pay, better life, but pass that legacy on to their children. That's exactly the same kind of thing we can be doing in education, is it not?
Uh-huh, yes, right.
Well, you've really stepped out into the politically incorrect arena, which is kind of unusual for academia. It takes real courage to do that. And now, being retired after such a long career, you're still stepping on stones, so we really respect that. How have you seen the educational process change since you started teaching many years ago?
Well, of course, the federal government gave money to schools for a long time in one way or another, but it didn't really get into the program of financial aid to individual students until quite recently. I think it was 1972 that the Pell Grant Program started. And the Pell Grant Program, while very well intentioned, the intention was to enable kids who came from low-income families to get to college, a very noble intention. However, because of the way it was set up, without any academic prerequisites, only financial prerequisites, it didn't provide an incentive to work hard. And I believe that was a terrible mistake in the design of the program.
Jackson, one of the schools we have, it's not just a school. It's called the KIPP School. Have you ever heard of it? The KIPP
program? What? I didn't get that.
It's K-I-P-P. Okay? It's basically parents and students from low-income areas enrolling in a KIPP school that excels.
Oh, yes, I have. I know about them. And they're charter schools, are they?
That's
not?
That's right. They're charter schools. And Jackson, the beauty of this, these are two fifth-grade teachers that got fed up with the public school system and said, we can do better in this. And they just got a $100 million grant. These are private grants. And their success record is extraordinary. I mean, these kids are working during the week. They're working late in the evening. They're working
exactly.
Coming out Saturday.
Well, now, let me, if I may interrupt you, I believe that again, we're dealing with incentives. The reason why the KIPP schools do so well is because kids and their parents want them to be there.
Exactly.
They believe in them.
Exactly.
And they get on waiting lists to get into them.
Exactly.
And the difference between them and most and the public schools is the public schools have some kids who want to be in them and want to learn, but unfortunately they have other kids who are disengaged and who are a disruptive influence in the classroom.
Well, when we return from break, Jackson, we're going to discuss more of your analysis on the lowering of higher education. So stay tuned, and you'll hear some surprising insights into college education.
opinion.
Can you hear me?
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Earn a better job for better pay and achieve a better life with Job Search, the Total System, now in its third edition, and through a host of valuable online resources at www.tcsworldwide.com. Thousands have successfully used these proven techniques to make their dream job or career a reality. One Total System user shared,
"This is without reservation the best advice on job search available. I used it over my career and each time got a better position for substantially increased pay."
Go to www.tcsworldwide.com and advance your career today. While you're on the site, please check out TCS University, which will bring you advanced resources like sample resumes, career assessment, total career success tracks, links to coaching services, and much more. Read Get Off the Treadmill, the Total Career Success blog from Ken and Cheryl Dawson, and check out our online store for products relating to the book and Total Career Success. Visit the website today at www.tcsworldwide.com. Total Career Success. Better job, better pay, better life.
Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Issa provides homeowners and investors eager to invest well in real estate the knowledge, resources, and tools necessary to generate significant wealth. Our focus will be the paradigm. Live where you want. Invest where it makes the most sense. Listen live to the brightest minds in real estate investment every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. That's Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Issa, where America learns to invest.
Oh, hi, Jessica.
Hi, Mrs. Johnson. Is Megan there?
Sure. Follow me. The kids are in the kitchen making sandwiches.
Hey, Julie.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Megan. Hey, Megan.
Yeah?
You're a total freak. God, you're ugly. And dumb. Oh, and your makeup makes you look like a tramp.
Oh, my God.
Tommy Morris told me you guys made out. Everybody knows. The whole school knows. He said your breath smelled like garbage, and he almost puked. He says you're the most desperate girl he knows. And that dress is totally hideous. You look like a big fat clown. Disgusting. Oh, and by the way, nice zit.
If you wouldn't say it in person, why say it online? Delete cyberbullying. Don't write it, don't forward it. For more information, visit ncpc.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Listening to Total Career Success with Ken and Cheryl Dawson. Do you have a question or comment for the hosts about today's show? Please call toll-free at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to tcsonair@tcsworldwide.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. Ken and Cheryl here, and we're talking with Dr. Jackson Toby, author of The Lowering of Higher Education in America. And Jackson, you argue in the first chapter of your book that part of the reason for inadequate student achievement in high school is that colleges are too easy to get into. Why is that the case?
It's the case because when enrollments began to grow after World War II, for several reasons. First of all the veterans, many of the veterans began to come in very large numbers, such that in the late 40s, half of the applications to colleges were from World War II veterans. We had many millions of veterans using that bill. And secondly, women began to increasingly go to college. Well, the colleges perceive this tremendous demand for their services, and they expanded enormously, particularly the public colleges and the community colleges. And after they expanded so much, they were kind of trapped by their expansion, and they couldn't really maintain very high standards and still fill up their classes. So they're sort of a little bit like businesses that overexpanded, and the net result is that perhaps of the 3,700 colleges and universities in the United States, 70 or 80% of them are so easy to get into that students really need essentially a warm body.
Wow, that's quite a catch-22. Well, even if students arrive unprepared to do college work, can't remedial English and math programs bring them up to speed?
That's a good question. We thought so at one time, but there are some things you have to start with early. You cannot become a ballet dancer if you get the idea of becoming a ballet dancer at 20 years of age. You have to have started at 6 or 7 and practiced. Same thing with a baseball player. You can't get to be a great baseball player if you suddenly decide to become a baseball player at 17 or 18 or 19. You have to have done it for a long time. Now, if you haven't been reading books and studying what you should have been studying in school in the early grades, then if you're admitted to college by a benevolent society who wants to give you the opportunities that college can give you, it may be too late.
Yeah, I hesitate to say too late, but I think that there's got to be a lot greater investment than just a course or two to try to bring people up to speed. I think about all the years that I was reading and studying and those were many years ago for me, but I really was committed. And so you're looking to increase that commitment by increasing the incentive right at the top in terms of admission. I think that's really a creative approach. I first came in touch with your book, Jackson, through the Wall Street Journal review that came out recently. And the reviewer, I think, suggests that perhaps you're embittered toward college students. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
No, I don't. Of course, no author is ever satisfied with the reviews of his books. But
we can relate to that.
In this case, I feel that the reviewer missed the entire point. The point of my book is not to condemn either the colleges or the students. If I'm going to condemn anybody, it's the Congresses, successive Congresses and successive presidents who, for the best of intentions, provided financial aid that didn't target properly the incentive to do well at the earlier grades. But my basic objective is not to condemn anybody, really, but to try to provide incentives to improve higher education, principally, and indeed the feeder schools in the primary and secondary schools. If I could be just a little bit more loquacious, and college professors are notoriously difficult to shut up, let me say that I continue to believe that human beings are mostly responsive to incentives, not always and not consistently, but they're not idiots. And if we say to parents, look, if your children don't do well in high school and grade school, they will have trouble getting into college and they will have trouble getting financial support when they get there. And they will put pressure on their students, as do the parents of certain groups. Now, Chinese and Japanese and Korean parents, for reasons that are cultural mainly, even if they're not well off, even if they're not well educated themselves, are constantly urging their children to do well in school.
Mm-hmm.
And they do well in school, and they are among our best students when most of them, when they get to college.
I think at that age, that those early ages, that the encouragement by the parents is all the incentive that is really needed.
Parents, sometimes kids don't listen to their parents. And sometimes parents don't know how to encourage well. But we do know, and there are plenty of studies that show, that the most important factor in student achievement is parental encouragement.
Yeah.
So, Jackson, one of the things that we, again, going back to Job Search at All System in our company, one of the things that we have found across the board in every case is we oftentimes have sons and daughters of our clients who are sometimes college students, university students. We've even had high school seniors in. And when we explain the importance of not only what you do in high school, but what you do in college and university as it relates to your grades and your success in companies, it's extraordinary. They see a correlation between doing well in high school, college, university, and then succeeding in jobs, succeeding in work. And to us, that oftentimes is exactly the incentive that students need to understand. If they're just in school and they don't understand that this is critical to their success once they graduate from colleges and universities, then they don't see an incentive. Would you like to comment on that?
Yes, I would like to comment on it. My book, which is, of course, stodgy, because professors can't help but write in a stodgy way, but in Chapter 5 of my book, I discuss at length the point that high school graduates earn over a lifetime half of what college graduates earn.
Mm-hmm.
And I point out that this is misleading because it's an average. And while it's true, the averages are pulled up by extraordinary earnings of some who do very well in college and do very well in the occupational field. But that if they, and I present statistical evidence to show that students who do not do well in college and who do not enroll in rigorous curricula are the ones who do very poorly economically. There's an overlap between these distributions, and not all college graduates do better than high school graduates, and certainly not better than the best performing college graduates. So Chapter 5 of my book may be somewhat dull, but it does contain a lot of information on the point you're raising.
In Texas, one of the things that we do, again, is talk to colleges and universities. We talk to admissions and universities and colleges who understand or need to understand, or we try to bridge a gap build a bridge between, you know, their academic achievement and their success in business. And when we talk about, you know, if they follow the system and they will achieve better job, better pay, better life, all of a sudden they get it. And they say, wow, now I understand what it is we can do to really help our kids.
Well, we're going to need to take a little break here. But when we get back, we'll talk more about higher education and what can be done to raise the bar. Stay tuned.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
earn a better job for better pay and achieve a better life. With Job Search, the Total System, now in its third edition, and through a host of valuable online resources at www.tcsworldwide.com, thousands have successfully used these proven techniques to make their dream job or career a reality. One Total System user shared,
"This is without reservation the best advice on job search available. I used it over my career and each time got a better position for substantially increased pay."
Go to www.tcsworldwide.com and advance your career today. While you're on the site, please check out TCS University, which will bring you advanced resources like sample resumes, career assessment, total career success tracks, links to coaching services, and much more. Read Get Off the Treadmill, the Total Career Success blog from Ken and Cheryl Dawson, and check out our online store for products relating to the book and Total Career Success. Visit the website today at www.tcsworldwide.com. Total career success. Better job, better pay, better life.
An ordinary sunny day. An ordinary family's living room filled with an ordinary bunch of kids. And they were doing nothing. They were couch slouching. They were rug imitating. And lazy minute after lazy minute was passing them by. When suddenly...
Huh?
Hey guys, that's a personal foul. Inactive activity on a sunny day.
Coming to the rescue was NFL running back Reggie Bush.
Players don't get lazy penalties. Let's play.
Those kids, they listened to Reggie. They got up and play they did. There was fun and running. There were smiles and jumping. And laziness was crushed.
Hey kids, don't get a lazy penalty.
Kids, listen to Reggie and avoid lazy penalties. Be a player. Get up and play for an hour a day. Go online to check out smallstep.gov for fun playtime ideas.
So you can be a player too.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Be a player.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network. Each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Listening to Total Career Success with Ken and Cheryl Dawson. Do you have a question or comment for the hosts about today's show? Please call toll-free at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to tcsonair@tcsworldwide.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. Ken and Cheryl here with Dr. Jackson Tobey, author of The Lowering of Higher Education in America. And we want to raise the bar, don't we, Jackson?
Yes.
And yet, you address one chapter in the book about the reality of grade inflation. Why is that not such a good idea?
I'm not sure that grade inflation is the worst problem, but it doesn't help. Let me be a little bit more specific. One of the things that has happened is that so many grades are at the top of the distribution. There are so many A's and A minuses and B pluses that it's very hard for parents, for graduate schools, for employers to distinguish the very best performance from less good or even mediocre performance, and that confuses the issue. It also has other unintended consequences. It's a grade is not only a grade; it is a message from the professor to the student about how well the student is doing. And if students get high grades for mediocre performance, they think the performance is better than it really is. And they're encouraged to go on in school or to go to graduate school when they really want to do something else.
Yeah.
So I think it creates confusion. And why does it occur? Well, one of the reasons it occurs, and I discuss some of that in my book, is that students want to get high grades. They don't want to put in a lot of work, so they put pressure on their teachers to give them better grades than they deserve. And that isn't very good either, because the students who don't put pressure on don't get as good grades as the students who harass their professors.
Wow. That's not a good situation at all.
Jackson, going back to the subject we discussed earlier, the charter schools, the private schools, you have almost exactly the opposite environment where the standards are really high and the parents understand that they've really got to help their kids with school and their students understand that they really have to work harder, smarter, longer, and study if they're going to be promoted and grow. And we can get that environment to move to the college and university level and then to the business level or whatever the individual chooses to do. That's exactly what business is saying today. It is absolutely critical that we raise our standards if these kids are going to be successful in business.
Are you asking me a specific question?
Well, just that I was just looking for your opinion on tying the achievement in colleges and university to achievement in business.
Well, I'm a little bit like the real estate agent who says there's only three important factors, location, location, location. I believe there's only three important factors, incentives, incentives, incentives. And it is not always easy to find the right incentives, but I do think that by dealing with financial aid more intelligently than we have done in the past, we provide a very important incentive that will have very far-reaching effects.
Now, you drive a distinction between loans and grants. Why do you do that, Jackson?
Well, let me put it this way. We started with grants. We started with the Pell Grants, a small program which has grown into an enormous program, $14 billion a year or so now in Pell Grants and other grants just from the Department of Education, and there are other grants. Now, what are grants? Grants are gifts. No repayment necessary. They're gifts from the taxpayer. Now, from a logical point of view, if I'm interested in incentives, I suppose I ought to say, well, we ought to put some academic requirements into grants also. But I think it is politically impossible to take back what you've already given. The expectation has been set that these gifts will be given, and it is possible, although unlikely, that the students who get the gifts, who are not serious students, who've done a good job in primary and secondary school, and who continue to study in college, who don't do hard work in these various places, will become late bloomers. So the gifts are an incentive. They're a bet that the society, American taxpayer, makes that is still possible. It's not very likely, but it's possible. Now, on the other hand, loans. Loans are different from gifts in that they have to be repaid, and they carry interest rates. So, but unlike mortgages, which at least have property that can be repossessed, foreclosed on, there is no criterion, collateral for a student loan, except the prospect that the student will get a good job and be able to repay the loan. So they're inherently risky. Or to put it another way, we have had subprime mortgages. We also have subprime student loans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the great danger. It's a danger to the students because if they can't repay their loans, they really meet financial disaster. I'm not going to take the time now to explain why it's so bad, but my book does go into that. But in addition to a financial disaster for the student, for the individual student who has to default on the loan, it's also a financial disaster for the American economy. And just as subprime mortgages produce serious consequences for the American economy, subprime student loans can result in a similar, though probably not as serious, problem for the American economy, too. We have now about $700 billion of existing student loans. And with the high unemployment rates, those default rates will go up, and they will go up more for students who haven't learned much in college.
Well, that's a scary prospect. What do you think the chances that Congress will adopt the kind of reform of student loans that you're advocating, Jackson?
That's a very good question. Because I'm an impractical college professor, I can't answer that question.
Oh.
I'm not a good enough politician to know how to influence Congress. Maybe someone who's listening to the program can help me.
But well, I hope so.
Jackson, my question is being impractical a strength or a weakness relative to your goal?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Is being impractical a strength or a weakness relative to your goal?
Uh-huh.
That's a question.
Would you repeat the question?
Well, being impractical, does that help you or hurt you?
Well, I was being facetious.
Yeah.
I don't really think it's impractical. I designed this program because I thought it might be practical. But there's a stereotype that professors are impractical.
Oh, okay.
And
well, I don't think you're very impractical, having read the book. So, I think there is a chance if we could get the Congress to listen up and get some organizations to support you.
Well, I hope so. Given my age, my true age, not the age I aspire to, which is 18, but my real age, which is 84, I don't have much more time to deal with Congress on this question, but I will do my best.
Well, Jackson, the fact that you're 84 and you're as brilliant as you are is automatically going to cause Congress to drop what they're doing and jump on your program right away.
I'm just amazed that you've done such incredible research, as an octogenarian. That's just phenomenal. And, well, we still have one more segment, so we can do a little bit more of selling here of this whole idea. And we have more insights to share, so don't go away.
All right, here I am.
News, opinion, your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
earn a better job for better pay, and achieve a better life. With Job Search, the total system, now in its third edition, and through a host of valuable online resources at www.tcsworldwide.com, thousands have successfully used these proven techniques to make their dream job or career a reality. One total system user shared,
"This is without reservation the best advice on job search available. I used it over my career and each time got a better position for substantially increased pay."
Go to www.tcsworldwide.com and advance your career today. While you're on the site, please check out TCS University, which will bring you advanced resources like sample resumes, career assessment, total career success tracks, links to coaching services, and much more. Read Get Off the Treadmill, the Total Career Success blog from Ken and Cheryl Dawson, and check out our online store for products relating to the book and Total Career Success. Visit the website today at www.tcsworldwide.com. Total Career Success. Better job, better pay, better life.
And now a weather update. Winds out of the south-southeast at 9 miles an hour.
Citizens of America, this is a message from feedthepig.org. Do not be alarmed. We are here to help you save yourself. According to public records, Americans spent more money than they earned in 2005. This is the first negative savings rate in the U.S. since the Great Depression. America, we must change our behavior. We need to stop spending every dime we earn and start feeding the pig. We must start putting away a piece of our paycheck. On the 1st and the 15th, we must pay ourselves before we pay anyone or anything. We must make a budget. And yes, even consider cutting up a credit card. And we must tell a friend to do the same. America, to start moving in the right direction, we must start a movement. Join us at feedthepig.org. Find the benefits of saving for every stage of life. Log on to feedthepig.org today.
And for more traffic updates, brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Listening to Total Career Success with Ken and Cheryl Dawson. Do you have a question or comment for the hosts about today's show? Please call toll free at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to tcsonair@tcsworldwide.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. We're with Dr. Jackson Tobey, author of The Lowering of Higher Education in America. We want to raise the bar. And being optimists, we believe that there's a way. And I think, Jackson, that having written this book at this stage in your career and really in your post-retirement years, that you believe that too. And as a lifetime as a sociologist and believing in a sentence as you do, what are the motivators that social policy needs to tap in order to raise the bar and keep it raised?
From a long-term perspective, I think that we have to provide incentives for students to work at education from a very early age. It's just not possible to go to college if they've been fooling around for 12 years in school and haven't learned anything, they haven't read anything. So that's the long-term perspective. But there are some things that we could talk about that are relatively short-term and can be learned. First of all, sociologists and psychologists talk about soft skills. Now, what are soft skills? Soft skills are things that count in education and employment, too. They are being polite, saying please, saying thank you, showing up, being reliable. One of the things that parents can do, and do in many families is teach these soft skills to kids. Sometimes I walk through a door at Rutgers, a student will be walking in front of me, and he'll just let the door slam. Other students will hold the door open and let me go in first. That's a soft skill. Another soft skill, which I've mentioned in passing, but let me say it again. It comes from the movie producer and actor Woody Allen. He said 80% of success is just showing up. Well, there are a lot of people who don't show up, who make an appointment with you and they don't come. Well, that's a very serious handicap. And so I think the cultivation of soft skills, which is easier to acquire even at a later age, is a very important factor in educational as well as occupational success.
So, Jackson, I have a question. In your experience, which is extraordinary, I find it difficult to believe that a college or university student today, who obviously is brighter, he wouldn't be there, doesn't understand that succeeding in college or university means succeeding in life. I mean, Cheryl and I were just like you. We have undergraduate degrees and two master's degrees, and we've worked our butt off to get to where we are. Explain to us, or explain to our audience, which is amazing to me, why these students would not want to be the best they can be in college or university, knowing that good grades is what it's going to take to succeed in whatever else they choose to do in life.
They don't know that. They don't know it because they have found that they can goof off and get by.
Well, they certainly cannot do that in business, or they can certainly not do that in other aspects of life.
Well, sometimes we all make mistakes. In fact, one of the charms of young people, one of the reasons I find them attractive, is that they have not yet made their major mistakes. I've already made my major mistakes. But they haven't learned this. And one of the things we have to do as adults is to try to get them to avoid at least some mistakes. And goofing off can be a very disruptive thing on the way to a more successful life and a more successful career.
But from our perspective, it's totally counterproductive, not just for them individually. It's counterproductive for the school, university, our society at large.
Yes,
I mean, look
yes.
Look at the cost. See, Cheryl and I look at this from a business perspective. Look at the cost that we are paying and productivity just by that attitude. And it is an attitude. I mean,
well, but they're not worried about productivity. They're worried about their individual lives, and that's where the incentives have to be. I come back to the three factors in achievement: incentive.
Right. In the short and long term aspect of it, I think is really important to drill in. To every student, you know, we work with all ages of clients, from those who are early out of school to those who've had 20, 30, even 40 years in a career such as yourself, Jackson. And in the current economy, as you said, with jobs so tough to come by, you have to realize that you're going to get left out if you haven't excelled in your particular chosen field. And we see many individuals going back to school now who are not able to get a job. And I think the more mature an individual becomes, and when they've been out in the real world and in the job world, they do get it. But I think you're right on target, Jackson, that we have to understand
what the long-term incentives are, and also to develop those short-term soft skills in order to be committed to the process. As Ken alluded to earlier, the Job Search a Total system really sets the bar high for every job seeker. If you want a better job for better pay, well, then you've got to be prepared to earn it. And really, I think you're saying the same thing, Jackson. Any closing thought, and tell us where we can get your book.
Well, I know it's on Amazon. I don't think it's much in bookstores. But
Amazon is easy for everyone.
I would say that lots of things are educational in a street smart sense, living in a broken home, being bugged, living through a serious illness. But colleges and universities are involved in a more narrow education, intellectual education. And
well, we're going to have to leave it there because they're playing the music for us, Jackson. But we have
been
thrilled
nice
to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Not at all. Bye-bye.
Jackson, really appreciate it. And we look forward to coming to New Jersey and helping you all we can in this endeavor.
Thanks again for joining us this week on Total Career Success with Ken and Cheryl Dawson. Remember to join us again next Monday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific, right here. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.